If you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.
Seize the world on kaya959.
On the street, on the air.
Now, Saul.
Yeah.
You do not know this, but you inspired this conversation we're about to have.
Oh, for real? Yeah. How now?
So, Saul is always meandering about. And you will have seen over the last 2 days, he tweeted about a car that he saw in a parking lot. It was an abandoned BMW 3 Series.
Oh, yeah.
And it was all dusty. And he's like, I wonder what happened to this guy. It's been here for over a year.
Yeah, in Rosebank Mall, yeah.
Yeah. Then yesterday, he's like, ah, the car's gone. And luckily, some people had pictures of the car being towed away. And they're like, well, it doesn't look like it's been stolen. Maybe it's a bank repo. I don't know, right? Now, that got me thinking, because we don't know what happened to the owner of that vehicle. Mm. And we don't know why it ended up in that parking lot. But as you can imagine, sometimes people just do die randomly. Like, you can park a car in a mall, for example, and then you die somewhere and nobody knows where you parked your car. Like, maybe if you park your car at a train station and then you fly out to Durban and then you meet your demise in Durban or even get arrested, nobody will even know where your car is, right?
It's true.
Yeah, and generally, most people, when they buy their vehicles, they'll be financed. And when you stop paying for that finance, they'll come and repossess the vehicle. Mm. Now, if we don't know where the vehicle is, it's very difficult for us to come and repossess the vehicle. And generally, what we use to track vehicles is a global positioning system. I'll just speak about it in very simple terms. I've got a friend of mine, Jan from Mierlin, on the line, who's going to explain technically how GPS actually works. But do you remember when you were young?
Yeah.
And you're playing Marco Polo.
Okay.
Do you know what Marco Polo is?
The TV game, I'm assuming.
No. Marco Polo is when you blindfold yourself and then you walk around a room or a landscape and you go Marco. Then the person's supposed to respond Polo. When they go Polo, you know where they are based on where the sound is coming from.
Okay.
You never play that game?
No.
Oh, okay. Well, a GPS is kind of digital Marco Polo, so to speak. There are global positioning satellites that orbit the Earth. And then those satellites send signals. And then you've got receivers, obviously, here on Earth. And then when they receive a signal, they calculate, okay, where did this signal come from? It must mean I'm here at this point, basically.
Okay.
In its simplest form. But Jan, at this point, you can take over. Good morning and thank you very much for joining us.
Good morning. Yeah, I love your explanation. So technically, what's necessary for GPS to give you a lock is you need to be able to see a set number of them in the sky. Let's say 3 satellites. So it can triangulate your position. And the more satellites you see, the more accurate your position is. And then it can also give you a height above sea level, essentially. Mm. That's essentially it. And, we've got all these technologies built up around GPS now that allow these systems to get a lock faster, that's not just purely satellite-based. It's actually over the internet using cell phone towers and all kinds of other tricks to essentially speed up how quickly a GPS can get a lock on a particular device. If you were taking just like a raw GPS, it can actually take minutes to get like a lock on. It's a pretty old technology, it requires quite a lot of help to get a lock fast. And then the other thing is that you really need a good view of the sky for it to work. If you're underground, then you won't get a clean lock. It might give off reflections,
yeah.
But you're not going to get like a clean lock. Like you really need to be outside for it to work.
This is a point I was getting to, right? The reason why Saul's car, for example, was not found for over a year is because this was in an underground parking lot under layers and layers of concrete. And sometimes, as you've just mentioned, the GPS won't work in those conditions. You actually won't even just get a tracking. That's why sometimes when people hijack vehicles, they'll take them to those parking lots for a cooling off period. But the thing with that is why it doesn't matter is because they still need to move the vehicle even after that. And so when they move the vehicle, that's when they usually get a lock on it and they get apprehended.
Yeah, and it's a lot of these vehicles aren't just protected by GPS. They'll have some kind of tracking companies, you know, whether it's Tracker or CarTrack or Netstal, whoever's system installed, and they have all kinds of ways to track vehicles using what they call terrestrial systems. In other words, earthbound, not in space. That usually requires their cars to pass by nearby, or some other kind of IoT network connection. They're always innovating on the product so that precisely to solve this problem, because it's not just people maybe dodging the repo man trying to hide their cars, but thieves who might be trying to get the car out of the country. So there's like a quite a lot of work done into these tracking systems to try and deal with crime like that.
Yeah. Now, one last ingredient that we haven't mentioned is power, right? Because in order for a receiver to work, it needs to draw its power from somewhere. When a car has been stationary for over a year, even the auxiliary battery, which may exist, which is a separate battery from the 12 volt, even that's been depleted. So now what happens in a situation like that?
Yeah, so usually if these systems are well designed, they will not deplete the battery beyond the point where it can start the car. Right. So, if a car has been stationary like that, then the GPS is definitely not running all the time, because of how power hungry it is. So you need some kind of parallel system to say, please activate the GPS so that I can get an accurate lock, on this car. And then it'll activate the GPS and begin the big current draw. And you'll see the same kind of, thing in your smartphone. Your smartphone doesn't have the GPS running all the time. It'll only activate when you launch your Maps app. And then they've got all kinds of smarts in them now. It might not even be proper GPS from the beginning. It'll be some kind of a parallel technology. And then when you need a pinpoint accurate lock, It'll activate the intelligently activate the GPS, because that thing will eat your battery very quickly. One last thing I want to point out is that a GPS is not just GPS anymore. GPS is the American system, but there's several of these now. It's called GNSS as the group term now. Mm-hmm. And there's a European system, there's a Chinese system, there's a Russian system, and most modern phones can connect to multiple now.
Yeah, and I mean, as you said, right, while it's still calculating where your positioning is, especially if you're driving, your positioning is changing, right? So that's why when they tell you where you are, they'll also have a little bit of disclaimer like, okay, accurate to the closest 10 meters or accurate to the closest 50 meters, because things are always changing while they're processing.
Yeah, and proper like location systems. So like what I mean by that is like less consumer facing ones. So like when you're launching Google Maps, Google Maps makes things quite simple for us. But if you have like a proper, let's call it like a security or military grade tracking app, it might draw a circle around your spot to let you know that the position and around other spots on the map that you might be tracking, to tell you that the position would be accurate up to that radius. So getting like 1 meter accuracy is extremely good. 40 to 100 meter accuracy is kind of like where an acceptable system would be.
Well, thank you very much for that, Jan. That's Jan from Mueller.
My pleasure.
Editor at My Broadband. And now I guess you understand how GPS or global positioning systems work. It still doesn't answer a question about what happened to the owner of Saul's car.
Dude, and it's not even a stolen car, I found out. It's such a strange story, hey? Like, who would leave it? It's a very decent-looking German car.
Actually, what Saul is talking about is not so strange to me. I used to work at the airport, and there were abandoned cars there all the time, and not necessarily in the basement parking only. There we had that long-term parking there near Empress Palace. So that's not... there's no basement there or layers of parking and all of that. There'd be cars there, that would stay 3-4 years unclaimed, they'd stay, you'd see this car is abandoned, and a lot of cars, and nice looking cars, like great cars, and you'd wonder where's the owner. So it's not only just at malls, whatever, it happens at the airport all the time.
So you gotta understand, it's only us that think cars are a big thing. Kwanabandu who are so rich, they don't really care. True. There are some people, for example, so in Dubai, cars get abandoned in Dubai all the time. And the reason for that is debt is illegal. So once people start to spiral into debt, they'll drive to the airport, they'll leave the car there, and they'll fly out because they know they're going to get arrested. And it'll be expensive cars like my Bugatti, all those things. Another thing is some people, for example, you know, Bobby Brown, when he had money, and Mike Tyson. Every city he'd go to, because they didn't want to rent cars, they'd buy the car that they wanted. So Bobby Brown says he'd get there, he'd buy a car for the weekend. And then when he was flying out, he'd just leave it there. He says he probably bought like 50 cars that he just left at the airport.
That's insane.
Some people think like that. Other people, for example, who come to South Africa to strike a big deal, say maybe they're Chinese, then when they're done with that work, that BMW, I don't know how much that goes for now, but for them, it's like, okay, couple hundred thousand here and there, leave this thing, doesn't matter.
Yeah, people started sharing stories when I obviously posted the car. And there's a Chinese guy from Lesotho who drove to Bloom to fly out, left a Volvo there. Still there, it's been 10 years, they say.
How abasa ashoge nokubonga nje ngoba ifusolaza angathwite ngayo bekuzwazela ukuthi yonke lesikhathi lesi imoto ikuphi. How nokubonga nje ukuthi ayisiyabonga ithi abanikazi bemoto umnikazi wayo ushonile or whatever or ithi ibhange siyabonga kade siyifuna singayitholi kodwa nje nge-tweet yakho yenza ukuthi sikwazi ukuyilocate.
Mhlawumbe intshontshiwe nje le moto, mhlawumbe khona umuntu ovela ebona wayelethele i-tow truck.
That's what I was thinking, but I think it was because I was talking to the MMC of safety. I think it's through him that the car was towed away. So I don't think it was bogus cops.
So I've got a question, right? About a year and a half ago when I started working in Melrose, we had a function called the Marriott. So we parked underground, but there were a lot of expensive cars like your Aston Martins, your McLarens, and they're all full of dust. Like, dust. You could see they've been parked there forever because some of them are even covered, but even the covers are full of dust. Some of them actually have flat tires. 2 weeks ago, my friend slept at the Marriott as well. She parked underground, and I must say, I literally saw the same cars that I saw about a year and a half ago. What does one do in this instance? Do you report them or what? Because surely they do not belong to the car dealerships around there, like your McLaren's, obviously, it's just upstairs, your Lamborghini, which is just around the corner, because they are all full of dust. What does one do?
Well, again, there are people that live in hotels. They own penthouses at the hotels. And those are their cars. There are people that literally have like 13, 14. If you go down to a basement, I think it's Gautrain Sandton. There's a plethora of Ferraris there. And it's just because people don't know where to park their cars if they own penthouses, so they park them there, and then they only use those cars once in a while.
And it's not even their biggest asset that they own. There's a guy who said a Russian dude owns a hotel and comes once every 5 years and parks his Lamborghini, collects dust. So those cars, you can't do anything about them, especially if it's private property in a private parking. They are owned by someone out there in the world.
That's pretty much it.
If you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.